Morning's today's daf and sota is daf lamed. Thank Gloop and Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is Lenzech and Shmuel Lipa Gabriela Bas Shmuel. We are in the middle of Chavtes Amud Beis discussing Tumat Tahara. Tumat Tahara now is discussion for most of yesterday. Sorry, let me take it back. All of yesterday and half of today. So Chavtes, both Amud Aleph and Amud Beis, and Lamed, Amud Aleph, and a little bit of Amud Beis, is going to be dedicated to the discussion of Tumat Tahara. Why? So it came up on Daf Chav Ches. When we started the new parak just a short couple days ago, so the Mishnah introduced us to a couple more halachas as it relates to Sota, but then a whole slew of halachas that are scattered issues, doesn't seem to be a connective tissue that connects these various issues, but as we pointed out, the common theme in the Mishnah is Baba Yom. When Rav Elazar ben Azari was appointed as the Nasi of the Jewish people, so he opened the doors wide of the base measure, a number of people walked in, Talmidei Chachamim, and they discussed numerous issues, numerous issues, and that's referred to as Baba Yom. So one of the things that was discussed on Baba Yom was issues regarding Tumah and Tahara. So it allowed the Gemara an opportunity to discuss some of the very basics of Tumah Tahara. Okay, and we're going to arrive at some conclusions today regarding Tumah Tahara, conclusions that we've seen before. But it's just a good opportunity in the Gemara to just immerse ourselves a little bit in the world of Tumah Tahara, being that we don't learn Seder Taharos, and we don't learn the actual source material, the Mishnayos regarding Taharos. So what we do is we just do like a little smattering of Tumah Tahara discussion throughout Shas, this being one of those places. Where are we? We are on Chavtes Amud Beis, and we're going to start again from the words Tanya. We learned in a Braisa. So it's a little bit towards the top of the Amud. We did this yesterday, but I'd like to start again from here. This is a good starting point for the discussion. We're talking about levels of Tumah and how far Tumah goes regarding various foods. Just as a quick recap from the Mishnah, so you remember the Mishnah, so Rabbi Akiva Darshan that when it comes to Chulin can go up to a Shlishi. Okay, that's not the Halacha. But that's the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva derives it from the fact that the Torah describing the Kli Cheres, the Torah says Yitma, and Rabbi Akiva therefore derives that you have a Sheretz in a Kli Cheres. The Sheretz is an Avatama. The Kli Cheres now is a Rishon Latuma. You have a food in the Kli Cheres also. The food's not touching the Sheretz. You have a food in the Kli Cheres, so not only is the... So let's start again from the Sheretz. Sheretz is an Avatama. Kli Cheres is a Rishon. The food inside is a Sheni. And now the Torah describing that food says Yitma, and Rabbi Akiva says he darshins that not only does the you could read it Yitma, but you could read it as Yitame. Not only is that food itself Tame, but it can cause another food to become Tame as well. Any food. That's the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva says that when it comes to Chulin can go upwards of a Shlishi Latuma. As I mentioned, that's not the Halacha, but back in the Mishnah, when Rabbi Akiva said that halacha, so Rabbi Yoshua reacted. And what was Rabbi Yoshua's reaction? Mi galei afar meinecha Rabbi Yochem et Zakkai. Who's going to wake up Rabbi Yochem et Zakkai? Rabbi Yochem et Zakkai was so worried that the later generations were going to go in the opposite direction. Later generations are just going to remove the whole concept of Shlishi L'tama because there's nowhere explicitly in the Torah where the Torah discusses Shlishi. And so that was Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai's concern. And meanwhile, here we have his Talmud, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai's very own Talmud, Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva actually went in the other direction. Not only did he not remove Shlishi L'tuma, but he actually expanded Shlishi L'tuma. Shlishi L'tuma was only for Truma. And meanwhile, what Rabbi Akiva did is he expanded it to all foods, all chulin can become a Shlishi.
Before Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai instituted this whole Shlishi L'tuma, right? Was there Shlishi and Reviv?
So I don't know if he instituted it. Meaning, I may take issue with the idea that he instituted. Meaning, he darshan the psukim, or
is that the Rabbanon or the Raisa?
Sounds like the Raisa, right there. It is important to note, and we're going to see this a couple times today. When is the Tumah the Rabbanon? When's the Tumah the Raisa? It sounds like the way Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai and the way the Gemara is about to construct all the arguments. It sounds like that when we're discussing the Shlishi as it relates to Truma, sounds like it's the Daraisa. So Gemara is using the Oraita methodology.
So if it's the Oraita, why was he worried that it was going to be like?
Because it's not explicit. It's not beferish in the Torah. It comes out through darshaning, and darshaning is subject to the basin. Basin it comes up to the arrives at a conclusion of how to darshan. And so even though it darshan's one way, but a later basin can darshan another way. Right? If the later basin is gadol b'chachma v'minyan, so then the later basin can give a different interpretation.
But I'm just to clarify something. This was something that's already intact. Right.
It sounds that way. But Rav Yochanan Zakkai was worried that it's very tenuous. It's not. It's based on a drasha, and a later basin may go ahead and reinterpret. Okay, with all that stated now, Chavtes Amud Beis. So Tanya, we learned in a brisa. So it's about a third of the way down in the Amud. Amar Rav Yosi Minayin LeRavi BeKodesh Apostle. So how do I know that when it comes to Kodesh, it's Apostle? So again, just the basics, the very basics. When we're talking about foods, we're talking really in three different categories: Chulin, Truma, and Kodesh. Chulin is just simply your food, the food you and I eat, non-consecrated food. Truma, the portion that we take off of produce. Grapes, olives, and wheat, and the grains, and according to the Rambam, all fruit, all fruit. So and we give a portion over to the Kohen. That portion given over to Kohen is truma. Truma is kedusha, and therefore, I don't want to sound, it's a correlation, but truma is more kedusha. And it is more susceptible to tuma. Truma can become a shlishi l'tuma. And finally, kodesh. Anything in the base of mikdash, which is a karban, food that is offered as a karban. So that's kodesh. So that can become a revi. Now, everything I just said is the halacha, meaning chulin up to a sheni, truma up to a shlishi, kodesh up to revi. Now that's the halacha. But as we're going to see over the course of this morning, not everyone agrees to these positions. that was a long one coming, yeah.
Is it
Chulin
Sheni make Truma?
In other words, Sheni Chulin is going to now, if it comes into contact with Truma, becomes a Shlishi.
If it's only Sheni, doesn't it become Puzzle after it already becomes Truma?
You're right. So by other Chulin. You're right, but by other Chulin, not by Truma. So Minayin LeRavi BeKodesh Apostle. So the Gemara now quotes Rav Yossi in this Braisa, and the Braisa starts off, according to Rav Yossi, how do I know that Ravi can become Kodesh? How do I know that Ravi becomes Apostle? And again, this is also, we've gone over this many times, needs to just drill it into all of us, and that is that when you have a food that can not only become tame but mitame others, so the correct word to use is tame. When you have a food when it comes into contact with tuma becomes tame but is not able to transfer it to something else, it's called pasul. Pasul just simply means it's tame and this is the end of the road. So when it comes to kodesh, how do I know that kodesh can become pasul by a revi? Vidinhu. So what Rabbi Yossi is going to imply over here is a kavachomer. Ma mechusi kiporim shemotu b'truma pasul b'kodesh. And what we're going to do is we're going to compare it to a mechusi kiporim. As we've discussed yesterday, mechusi kiporim is somebody who is an avatoma, like a zav, a zava, a matzora, a yoledes, who, after they tov on the mikvah and after they conclude their tahara, are not fully tahor, but rather what they have to do is the day following they have to bring a carbon to the base of mikdash. That carbon provides them full kapara, and in this case, full tahara. So, even though they had tefillah b'mikvah and herif shemesh, they still need one more step in their tahara process, and that is carbon the very next day. Until they bring the carbon, they're what's referred to as mechusa kippurim. Now, what is the effect of mechusa kippurim? Mutar b'truma. A mechusa kippurim is allowed to eat truma. Because consider, they already went into the mikvah, they already had herif shemesh. We learned the first Mishnah brachos. We learned, that's it. You're a kohen, and you undergo tefillah and herif shemesh. That's it, you're allowed to eat truma. And mechusa kippurim also is allowed to eat truma, even though they have one more step to go. What are they banned from? What are they barred from? Kodesh. A mechusa kippurim cannot eat kodesh until they bring the karbanos the very next day. So, ma mechusa kippurim shemutar b'truma pasul b'kodesh. Now, as it relates to mechusa kippurim, so mechusa kippurim is allowed to eat truma. Meanwhile, if the mechusa kippurim touches kodesh, that kodesh becomes disqualified, meaning tame but end of the road tuma. Shlishi shepasul b'truma. Now, let's compare the mechusa kippurim to a shlishi. A shlishi is pasul b'truma, which means that a shlishi is what truma can become. Oh, thank you. Thank you. So shlishi can become pasul. Ain't no din she yasa revi bekodesh. So if shlishi can become pasul, and remember that's one that's already greater than mechusar kippur. Mechusar kippur can't. Is allowed to eat truma. So shlishi, which is disqualified by truma, ain't no din. So it stands to reason, it's a kavachomer, that it's going to make a revi'a b'kodesh.
Can you explain what's the logic?
We are comparing mechusar kippurim to a shlishi.
I know, but there are two different things. Shlishi is a food item, and mechusar kippurim is a person.
It's a person, right? And you can make a very clear separation between the two, as the Gemara said yesterday, and the Gemara is going to say again later on. Meaning, a person can at least theoretically become an avatuma, and that's not true regarding food. Meaning, you can poke holes at the argument. Okay, but the Gemara, this is an argument.
So, but what's the rationale that shlishi is more stringent than
a mechusar kippurim? In what way? Because shlishi will invalidate truma, and a mechusar kippurim is allowed to eat truma. So if the mechusar kippurim is allowed to eat truma, will disqualify kodesh, shlishi, which invalidates truma, for sure will make kodesh a revi. That's the argument. Now Rav Yossi concludes by saying, now as far as kodesh becoming a shlishi, that is already explicitly mentioned in the Torah. And so since that's already explicitly mentioned in the Torah, so what's left using the kavachomer? So the kodesh mena truma, Revi mikavachomer. So what's left using the kavachomer is that kodesh can become a revi. Meaning, without the Torah having stated that kodesh can become a shlishi, so at best what I could have generated through the kavachomer is that kodesh can become a shlishi. But once the Torah already covers that, so now I have a kavachomer. The kavachomer extends to one more level. Kodesh can become a revi.
So they're basically saying they're using basically Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai's concept here, right?
Okay,
they're using it. They're basing that's starting from there.
Correct.
Right?
Correct. Correct. Okay. And shlishi l'kodesh mina Torah minalan. And then just finishing up. And how do I know the shlishi can become a kodesh? Dichsiv abasar sher yiga b'chol tamei lo yochal. Basar over here means the meat of a carbon shlamin, which touches something which is tamei lo yochal. You're not allowed to eat it. Now, what's the Torah describing? So we don't know what tuma it is that touched the basar kodesh, but mi lo askinan. But at least it's conceivable. The Torah doesn't limit. So we're going to go now, at least that which is mentioned in the Torah, to the at least the extent of the possibility. What is the limit of possibility? The Naga B'Sheni, where the Kodesh touches Sheni, because at least we know the Torah describes the Sheni. That we know. So the Kodesh touches Sheni, v'amarechmano lo yachal. And the Torah says that when the Kodesh touches a Sheni, the Kodesh becomes now a Shlishi. So that's the Pasuk in the Torah, again, using an assumption, but that's the Pasuk in the Torah saying that Kodesh can become a Shlishi. And now that I have a Kavachomer, the Kavachomer extends in one more level, and that can become now a Revi. So Revi mi Kavachomer, Revi mi Kavachomer kedam aran. All right.
When
Ravi
becomes a
Kodesh, it
becomes
Devi,
it has a potential of becoming another Kodesh?
No, that's it. End of the road.
Or is it a
Puzzle? Puzzle. The, right.
So when you say Ravi is Puzzle, it doesn't have potential of becoming another.
Correct. Agreed. Right. Amar Rav Yochanan Tamri b'Ani Yodea. Now, on this is all a brisa that we learned, and this is where we got up to yesterday. Now, this brisa of Rav Yosef. Wait, just one second. Just give me a second. So the Amar Rav Yochanan Tamri b'Ani Yodea. So the Gemara says that Rav Yochanan now, trying to process this halacha of Rav Yosi, he says, I don't understand. So Mahu, I'm sorry, Tamri b'Ani Yodea. Mahu sha'arei tshuvasa b'tzido. Meaning when Rav Yochanan considers the logic and the argument of Rav Yosi, by the way, he refers to Rav Yosi as Baribi. Baribi means a great one, right? Rav Yosi throughout Shas. So you see the way the Amoraim described Rav Yosi, he was clearly viewed as the gadol. I mean, they're all great, but Rav Yosi was given a special recognition and a special honor amongst the Amoraim. So Rav Yochanan says, look, I'm trying to understand the kavachomer of Rav Yosi, but I really don't get it. Ochel haba machmas tevil yom yochiach, because let's consider the following. Let's talk about food that was touched by a tvul yom. So shepasal b'truma. Now we know the tvul yom cannot eat truma, right? And not only that, the tvul yom touches truma, the truma becomes pasal. I mean, that's the very nature of a tvul yom. Tvul yom is somebody who was tamei, toveled in the mikvah, and is waiting for Harav Shemesh, waiting for nightfall. Between the Tefillah B'mikvah and Harav Shemesh, so he's now a Tvul Yom. We know that Tvul Yom, if he were to come into contact with Truma, passes the Truma. Ve'eino osa revi b'kodesh. And we also know that a Tvul Yom does not make food a revi. Ditanya. And the Gemara says, and how do we know this? Where is this from? So, Abba Shalom, Tvul Yom, Tchila Kodesh, Latamishnaim, V'lifsal Echad. So, The Gemara over here discusses, brings down a Braisa, and this Braisa over here gives us the various opinions regarding a Tvul Yom. Whenever Tvul Yom comes up in the Gemara, so generally what we say is the Tvul Yom is a Sheni. We say that, and it's also kind of drilled into my head, but the truth of the matter is, it's not a Davar Muskam. Not everyone agrees what the level of a Tvul Yom is. Here's what we know. A Tvul Yom was once a person was Tameh, Toveled in the Mikvah. Nighttime is going to become Tahor. That we know. But what is his level of tumah between the tefillah and the nightfall? Meaning, is it the same level? Is it a residual tumah? So that part is unclear. Again, it's easiest to say that's a sheni because that's generally speaking what it is. But as we're seeing, just seen about a moment right now, it's not clear.
At the beginning. Right, when he was
Tamei Meis,
he was a Rishon.
No, not Tamei Meis is not the best example because he needs 7 days. But it's not a terrible example because we could talk about the seventh day.
At the very new, is a Rishon or
it was an Av.
He went from an Av third day and then seventh day and became a Shein.
And after Tefillah B'Mikvah, so now he is.
What about between day three and day seven? What is that?
I don't know. I assume an Av. I assume
still enough, and then he drops him an after shading.
That's my assumption. I'm not saying I'm right, but that's what I would assume. So the time of the Gemara here quotes the Braisa. Abba Shalom Tvul Yom Tchila Kodesh L'Tamishnayim V'Lif Solecha. When it comes to a Tvul Yom, so he's a Tchila L'Kodesh. He's a Rishon, which means that he's going to be Metame two levels below that, and possibly one below that as well. Meaning that he's a Rishon. So now he touches something that item is going to be a Sheni. That item touches something all in the world of Kodesh. That Sheni touches another item. That item is going to be a Shlishi. So now he's a Rishon. Now he's going to. Two foods after that are going to become tummy. What about the next food? The next food's going to be tummy as well. But because it's the end of the road, so instead of calling it tummy, we're going to call it pasul. That is the opinion of the Tanakh of Abba Shaul. Rabbi Meir Omer Metame Echad Posel Echad. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that it's Metame one and Posel the next. Meaning, he's a Sheni. What he touches is a Shlishi, and next thing it becomes a Revi. V'chacham Emarim Kishem Sheposel Ochle Truma Mashke Truma Kach Posel Ochle Kodesh Mashke Kodesh. And then we have the opinion of the Chachamim. The Chachamim say that he passels Truma. Passeling Truma means that he is a Sheni. The Truma now becomes a Shlishi, but because by Truma it's the end of the road, so therefore it's passel. And then it's the next part that we want right now. I mean, we want. We're going to base the question on the next point, which is that when the Tvul Yom touches Kodesh, it passels Kodesh. Right, you didn't see that coming. Meaning, if he was a Sheni, so then the Kodesh becomes a Shlishi, and then it should go one more level, like Rabbi Meir said. But this is not Shita's Rabbi Meir. This is the Shita of the Chachamim. The Chachamim say that he touches Truma, it becomes Pasul. He touches Kodesh, it becomes Pasul. I'm sorry, just give me a second. Umashke Truma kach Pasul, ochle Kodesh, umashke Kodesh. So now, with that in mind, so what Rav Yochanan is saying is, I'm trying to process the argument of Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi says, well, let's take a look. When it comes to Mechusa Kippurim, so Mechusa Kippurim is allowed to eat Truma, and yet disqualifies Kodesh. So when I have Shlishi, which invalidates Truma, for sure it's going to Pasul Kodesh. That was the argument of Rav Yossi. That's the Kavacham of Rav Yossi. Rav Yochanan says, I don't hear it. Meaning, because I'm going to assume, and it's an assumption, I'm going to assume that Rav Yossi agrees with the Shita of the Chachamim. Meaning, in this Braisa, we have three Shitas, Abba Shaul, Rabbi Meir, and the Chachamim. I'm going to assume that he's holding at the Chachamim, what the Chachamim just teach us. That when I have a Tvul Yom is going to render Kodesh a Shlishi, and that's it. And it's not going to go further than that. And if you like that Kavachomer, if you subscribe to the Kavachomer, so it should go beyond Shlishi, it should go to Revi. So Rav Yochanan says, based on my assumption that Rav Yossi agrees with the Chachamim, why doesn't the Kavachomer bring us to the point of Revi? That's the question Rav Yochanan says. Rav Yochanan says, I don't understand. Maskev l'Rapapa mimai de Rav Yossi k'Rabban Svirlei. So the Rapapa says, well, you only are asking that question based on an assumption. And maybe you're not right. Dilma Kabashal Sfirle. It could very well be that Rav Yossi does not agree with the Chachamim, but rather agrees with Abishal. Now, Abishal took us where? He took us from the Tful Yom being a Rishon, then two more foods, and then a third food after that. Meaning, the Tful Yom is a Rishon, touching a Kodesh food becomes a Sheni, touching another food, Kodesh food becomes a Shlishi, touching another Kodesh food, and that Kodesh food becomes a Revi. So, it could very well be that Rabbi Yossi subscribed to the opinion of Abishal.
But you could go by Rav Meir also.
Or, yeah, right.
Also, would do the same thing.
Fair. Okay, but just, in other words, the point is that he doesn't necessarily have to go like the Chachamim. The Amar L'Tam Yishlam V'Lif Sol Echad. So, Isak Adat Chakab Ashal Sfir Le'e Le'e L'Revi B'Korosh Me'el Chal Shabbat Machmas Tvil Yom. So the Gemara says, okay, but if we're now going to take Rabbi Yossi and align him with Abishal, so then, why did Rabbi Yossi, when constructing his Kavachomer, so why did he use Mechus Kippurim? Meaning, if in fact he agrees with Abishal, so the same argument, the same Kavachomer can be generated, but not from Mechus Kippurim, he could just make it from Tvul Yom. And it would sound something like this. Uma Ocha Ba Machmas Tvul Yom, the Tvul Yom Gufe Mutter Bechulin. Now the Tvul Yom is allowed to eat Chulin. And we're all in agreement. You're a Tvul Yom. You told them the mikvah. You have to wait till Erev Shemesh. Chulin, that's not a problem. Amar dos the Revi B'Kodesh. And meanwhile, the Tvul Yom in the world of Kodesh goes all the way to Revi, according to Abishal. Ochel Shlishi, now, when we're talking about a third degree Tumah. Hababa Machmas Sheni. The Sheni Gufa Asa B'Chulin. Now we know that Sheni itself renders Chulin invalid. Ain Odin shows the Revi B'Kodesh, so shouldn't it make a Revi B'Kodesh? So in other words, if Rav Yossi really subscribes to Abishal, as Rav Papa is arguing, what a sentence. I'll say it again. This is hard tomorrow. If Rabbi Yossi is subscribing to Abishal, as Rav Papa argues, so then why did Rabbi Yossi, when constructing his Kavachomer, use the Mechus Kippurim model in order to create his Kavachomer, if in fact he agrees with Abishal, so then his Kavachomer should be generated simply from Tvul Yom. So the V'chitem Mishem Deikalam Mifrach Malat Tvul Yom Shekein Avatoma. So the Gemara says, and what was it? And what could be your argument? And Ben, I told you this argument was coming up. You could simply say, what are we comparing? We're comparing food being susceptible to Tama to a person who's a Tvul Yom. A person who's a Tvul Yom, he at least has the potential of being a Navatama. And the truth of the matter is that the Tvul Yom himself may have been a Navatama. So how can you compare that to a food where food at best can only be a Rishon, a Sheni? Food cannot become a Navatama. Even if food touches a mace, the food is not going to become an avatoma. Right? Rashi said that in yesterday's daf. So how can I compare a person to food? So the Gemara says, "Hai isneim mechus kippurim v'lo parche." But the Gemara says, but I'll tell you what though, that doesn't bother Rav Yossi. And I know it doesn't bother Rav Yossi, because what did Rav Yossi use as his model for the Kal V'chomer? Rav Yossi used mechus kippurim. He's comparing a mechus kippurim, which is a person, to food. Now again, you could have asked, how can you compare a person to food? A person can become an avatama. Food cannot become an avatama. But that clearly didn't bother him because he used it as a kavachomer. So the Gemara says, so, just we're going to leave off on a question. If, in fact, Rabbi Yossi agrees with Abishal, so then why didn't he create his kavachomer based on the Tvul Yom model rather than using the Mechus Kippurim model? That's the question the Gemara asks, to which that question was, I'm sorry, the reason why we assumed that he was going like Abishal is because we were trying to defend Rav Yossi against Rav Yochanan's kasha. Rav Yochanan says, I don't understand the Kavachomer. Rav Yochanan says, we find that it's full Yom, according to the Chachamim, doesn't render Kodesh a Revi. So, and meanwhile, a Tvul Yom is allowed to eat Chulin. So, okay. So anyway, so we leave it off as a kasha. Okay.
This is a kasha from Rabbi Yochanan that still stands, right?
So it sounds like, right. It sounds like Rabbi Yochanan's kasha still stands, to which, right, he doesn't understand. He doesn't understand Rabbi Yossi.
What if he had, like, compared Rabbi Yossi to a Meir? Wouldn't that have worked, that model?
Maybe. I'll need to think more about that. That I don't know. Amar Avasi, Amarav, Amrila, Amarabba, Bar Isi, Amarav, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Eliezer. Kulu Sri Lahu, Dain Shini Osa Shlisha Bechulin. Okay, so Where do we stand in terms of a shlishi? So again, just a reminder, go back to the Mishnah on Chav Zayin Amud Beis. The Mishnah told us Rabbi Kiva innovated. And he said that when it comes to chulin, sheni can make a shlishi. That was Rabbi Akiva back in the Mishnah. Now, again, Rabbi Yeshua's response is, hey, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, can you imagine? This is what Rabbi Akiva is saying. Now, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai at this point in time wasn't alive, but speaking about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and his very own student, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said that a sheni makes a shlishi only by truma. Rabbi Akiva expanded, and he said that sheni makes a shlishi as it relates to even chulin as well. Now the Gemara is going to point out, the Gemara says in the name of Rav, that I'm going to string together numerous Tanayim. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Tanaim who are all of the opinion that no, Sheni does not make a shlishi in the world of Chulin, and we're going to now list off Mishnayos throughout Shas showing how all these Tanaim do not agree with Rabbi Akiva.
These Tanaim that are listed
are students of Rabbi Akiva.
Right,
yep.
This shouldn't really count, right?
Yep.
Only have Yoshua and Elazar and Eliezer.
Correct. So okay, so good. So Ben points out, good. I'm just going to reiterate the question. Yeah, Ben points out. How did he darshan? Okay, good. That's a good question. I don't know. Okay, so so Ben points out that a number of these people who argue with Rabbi Akiva are very talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. So how does that play out? So again, good. More questions I don't know how to respond to. But in the meantime, however, let's do it. So Rabbi Meir did not. So here we go now. Number one, Rabbi Meir. Kolaton bias mayim midivrei sofrim. Anything that requires tefillah b'mikvah midrabanan mitame as a kodesh uposos a truma. So if I have tuma derabanan, so if it comes into contact with kodesh, it's mitame kodesh. And again, just knowing the terminology, mitame kodesh means that kodesh becomes a shlishi, where it in turn now it comes into contact with another kodesh becomes a revi. Posos a truma disqualifies a truma, meaning that anything which is tame midrabanan is now when it touches truma is going to invalidate the truma, meaning the truma will become a shlishi, end of the road. Umutter bechulin uve meiser, divrei Rabbi Meir. And as if it comes into contact with chulin or meiser over here means meiser sheni has a little bit of kedusha. We know this because meiser sheni has to be brought to Yerushalayim, can only be eaten in Yerushalayim, not limited to who can eat it, kohen, non-kohen can eat it, but it has to be eaten within the confines of Yerushalayim, and has a little bit of kedusha. Yet, according to Rabbi Meir, meiser, just like chulin, if it came into contact with something with the tumah derabanan, will not be affected. Div Rabbi Meir. Anyway, what do you see from v'chachamim omrim? V'chachamim osrim meiser, and the chachamim say no. That when it comes to meiser shein, if it touches tumah derabanan, it will become disqualified, meaning it becomes possible, becomes tame. In the meantime, however, what do you see clearly from Rabbi Meir that when you're dealing with chulin stops at sheni. That shita's Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi Adamaran. Now, as far as Rabbi Yossi is concerned, cover that already. Meaning, go back to yesterday's daf, and you'll see in yesterday's daf, Rabbi Yossi says that when it comes to chulin, it stops at sheni. Truma goes to shlishi, and kodesh goes to revi. Diemisa leisa l'revi, but truma v'chamisha b'kodesh. Because if Rabbi Yossi was of the opinion that when it comes to chulin goes all the way to shlishi, so then, remember, a pasuk in the Torah telling us that when it comes to kodesh, it can go beyond chulin. Well, if chulin goes to shlishi, so beyond shlishi, of course, is a revi. And then you had a kavachomer. When the kavachomer would take us from revi to chamishi. Now, Rav Yossi doesn't do all that. Rav Yossi says that that the Torah gets us to shlishi and the kavachomer gets us to revi. Well, if we're talking shlishi revi, so the only thing before that obviously is a sheni. So you see that chulin can maximum become a sheni. Rabbi Yoshua, again, just give me a second. Rabbi Yoshua did not. We are now up to Rabbi Yoshua. This is the third Tana. Rabbi Lazar Omer Ochel Ochel Rishon Rishon Sheni Sheni Shlishi Shlishi. The Rashi points out over here, these were now having a strictly Tumah Derabanan discussion. Where? If I take a food and I eat the food, according to Rabbi Eliezer, you are what you eat. You eat a Rishon, you're a Rishon. You eat a Sheni, you are a Sheni. Now, Minatora, food cannot be metame a person. An avatuma can be metame a person, but not a food. A food, as we already established, can only become a vlad. It can only become a rishon, a sheni, a shlishi. But food cannot become an avatuma. So a food cannot be metame a person. Min a Torah, the only thing that can be metame a person is an avatuma. So, and yet the chachamim made a gzera, a tuma de rabbanan, where if I eat food which is tame, I become tame. To what degree do I become tame? Machlokas tanayim. Rabbi Lazar, again, just give me a second. Rabbi Lazar omer ha'ochel ha'ochel rishon rishon, sheni sheni, shlishi shlishi. So according to Rabbi Lazar, your level of tuma will be corresponding to the food, level of tuma of the food. Rabbi Yoshua omer ha'ochel ha'ochel rishon ve'ochel sheni sheni. Rabbi Yoshua disagrees. He says, if you eat a rishon or a sheni, you become a sheni. And shlishi, sheni b'kodesh ve'en sheni b'tshuma. So, and if I eat a shlishi, I am a sheni as it relates to Kodesh, and not a sheni as it relates to Truma. Now, just to understand this, how can I be eating a shlishi? Meaning, if we're talking about chulin, chulin can't become a shlishi. Now, we're assuming that Rav Yehoshua holds that, and we know that so because think about the context of our whole discussion. I'm going to string together a group of Tanaim, five Tanaim, who all are of the opinion that chulin cannot become a shlishi. So now, how can it even be that I'm eating a food which is a shlishi, that's a shlishi l'tumah, if Rabbi Yeshua does not subscribe to this concept? So to that, the next line is the giveaway. B'chulin shenasu ataras truma. So chulin that was done, we're treating the chulin like truma. Ataras truma in, ataras kodesh lo. Rashi has a different girsa than the Gemara over here. Rashi prefers this girsa. I'm going to read the girsa according to Rashi. Ataras truma in, chulin greater lo. Okay, and the point is as follows. Let's say I want to practice what it's like to eat truma. Right? I'm not eating truma right now, but I know there's a higher level sensitivity when it comes to truma. And I like to practice. So you know what? As a family, here's what we're going to do. We're going to pretend all the food in our house is going to be like truma, with the same sensitivity towards truma. That's the concept of chulin shenasa ataras truma. If we do this forever, whatever duration we do this, so then truma can become a shlishi. Our food in our house, because we're treating it like truma, is going to become a shlishi as well. So to even have this discussion of, we're not talking about truma, we're talking about regular food, and I'm eating it, and all of a sudden I'm eating a shlishi. What am I doing eating a shlishi? Because it's chulin shenasa ataras truma. That's how we got to this point. But what's clear from Rabbi Yeshua's position is that if we're not in training, if we're not desensitizing ourselves to eating truma, and if it's just regular chulin, where's the end of the road? The end of the road is a sheni, not a shlishi.
How do you know that Rabbi Kiva didn't subscribe to it, and that's what he meant? Because he was the Rabbi Yeshua also.
Yeah, I know, but Rabbi Kiva's position stated clearly in the Mishnah.
Couldn't it be that it was within the context of people who were being...
Could be. The Gemara doesn't understand it that way. So I just assume then that's how the Gemara understood it. Okay, so I'm a Kesav, and Sheni Oseh Shlishi B'chulin.
One more question. You said that Chulin cannot be Metave Adam, right? Because it's Sheni.
Chulin cannot be Metave... Food?
Midoraita.
Right.
Okay. Midoraita, can food be Metame Kachim or Chumun?
Sure, but that's another food.
I see.
Okay. Rabbi Lazar, Ditanya, Rabbi Lazar, Omer, Shloshtan, Shavim. So Rabbi Lazar is of the opinion that the three are equal in the following sense. Three meaning, Chulin, Truma, and Kodesh. They're the same in the following sense. Harishon, Sheba Kodesh, Ushiba Chulin, Sheba Truma, Mitame, Shnayim, Uposal, Echad. Harishon, Sheba Kodesh, Ushiba Chulin, Ushiba Truma. So, Mitame Shnaim Uposal Echad Bekodesh Mitame Echad Uposal Echad Betruma Uposal Echad Bechulin. So Rebbe Luz is of the opinion that when it comes to Chulin can only passel one more level. Meaning Erishon, but Chulin can only passel one more level. He says the Beferish, meaning that when it comes to Chulin can only become a Sheni. And finally, last, Our last Tana that is of the opinion that when it comes to Chulin, Chulin goes to Sheni and not past Sheni. It does not go to Shlishi. We learned in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Chala Nitles Minatara Ala Tameya. Okay. This Mishnah over here, to appreciate this Mishnah, so we're going to learn today a couple of Mishnayos in Chala. We're in the second parak in Chala, and the second parak in Chala reads as follows. I do not know the Mishnah in Chala by heart. I'm looking at Rashi. Rashi brings it down, so second to last Rashi in the Amud. Rashi writes, Hachishir Chala Echad Michav Dalin. Well, how much you have to take off for challah? The mitzvah of challah is that when I have a dough, I have to take a portion of that dough and give it to the kohen. Nowadays, obviously, we don't have kohanim. I mean, we do have kohanim. We don't give our challah to the kohanim for various reasons. Tumah being the most obvious of reasons. Pedigree and yichus is another issue. Okay, anyway, put it simply, we don't give our challah to the kohanim. So we take a small amount and we burn it, and that's what we do with our challah nowadays. But in the time where challah was given to the kohanim, so how much of your dough did you need to give to the kohen? So it depends if you were a homemaker or a baker. You're right, a balabas or a professional. If you're at home and you're making your dough at home, so you give a 24th of your dough over to the kohen. If you are a baker, the chachamim understood that giving a 24th is really going to cut into your profit margin. So the chachamim allowed you that you only need to take off a 48th. Either way. It's basically either 2% or 4%, approximately. 2% for the baker, 4% for you and me. Corporate
tax.
Right. Correct. So, Mechavdal, Nitma Isasa Shogega So Anusa, Echemi Memches. Now, let's say your dough becomes Tameh. By accident. What would be the point of taking of being Mafish Challah? There really, really wouldn't be much of a point in doing so from the Cohen's perspective. Because now what are you going to be giving the Kohen? You're giving him challah, which is Tameh. He can't eat it.
Can he get benefit from it, like a salad, or use it as like a something?
I don't, fertilizer
or whatever.
Yeah, okay. I'm not sure. I would guess an answer, but I don't know. I do not know clearly. Anyway, so echad mimemches. So the chachamim said, okay, you know what? Take off a 48th, because from the Kohen's perspective, for him it's useless. From our perspective, we need to be mafresh challah. We can't eat dough until you're mafresh challah. But to take off a 24th, 4% of it, where the Kohen does not going to use it, that's a lot. That's a lot gone to waste. So take off a 40th. Take off basically 2%, and you're good. And then b'mezid. However, if the dough becomes tameh b'mezid, so the chachamim basically said to you, now. Right, and that's not right. Meaning, you're going to be metame your dough, and now you're going to get a break where you normally had to take off 4% to give it to the kohen, and now you take off 2%. That's not right. So echad michavdal shelo yechote niskar. So the Mishnah in Challah teaches us, second parak of Challah, the Mishnah there in Challah says is that if you're metame your dough b'mezid, you need to take off a 24th. You need to give 4% over to the kohen. I know the kohen's not going to have any use of it, but you are metame the dough b'mezid. I don't want the sinner to profit. Good. That's the Mishnah in Challah. Then the next point in the Mishnah, and again, I'm just reading Rashi. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Heicha Denitma Mezida Tal Shacheres Batar V'Titol Mentahara Ala Tmeya Mishum Demitzvah L'Chomen Amukaf. So Rabbi Eliezer says, I'm going to go one step further. This idea that I'm going to take off, I was Matami Dobe Mezid. You know what said Rabbi Eliezer? That's really not right. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to make another dough, Bitahara. And then that second dough, you're going to take off Challah from that second dough onto the first dough. Okay, so in other words, what you're going to be giving is your 4% of not Tameh Challah to the Kohen, but you're going to give 4% of Tahor Challah to the Kohen, and then obviously on the second dough, you need to be Mafresh Challah again on the second dough, covering the second dough. The first Afreshes Challah on the second dough was for the first dough. The second Afreshes Challah on the second dough is for the second dough. Says Rabbi Eliezer, that's what I want you to do.
So you're going to get 1 24 times 2?
Yeah. And furthermore, says Rabbi Eliezer, we have a problem. Let's call it a problem. It's a small problem. And that is when I'm mafish chal, I have to do some in amokav. What does that mean? It means that I'm separating one portion of the dough from the other portion of the dough. When I'm separating, it has to be proximate to one another. Now, generally speaking, it's more than proximate to one another. They're connected. And I'm disconnecting. But in this particular scenario, I'm being mafresh from one dough onto another dough. So they have to be proximate to one another. Now, proximate, as we're going to see in just a moment, means contact. They need to be touching one another. Here, I don't want them to touch one another. Because the whole idea over here is that one dough is tameh and the other dough is tahor. I don't want them touching one another. On the other hand, there's a halacha. Rashi says, we learned it out through based on drashas, that they should be touching when I'm being mafresh. So the small problem is that I want to be mafresh chala tahora on dough which is tamea, but the problem is the mitzvah and the mufkar is to have them touching one another. The problem is once they touch, the tahora dough becomes tamei. That's the problem. What's the solution? So that's again, I'm just reading on in Rashi. Ketsa tase sheyehem in a mukaf utahora. How can I satisfy the halach of mukaf and keep the tahor do tahor? They'll tell us kedei chalas atmei meisa satara. Ashal ahorma chalta di ihorma chalta de tahora. Sulamatzil afreshim in a pato lachiv velochay lasu shem chala. So I'll be mafresh it before giving it the status of chala. And then only after I take it off, then and only then I give it the name chala. And in doing so, because it's not yet called chala, it doesn't have that extra level of sensitivity where it becomes susceptible to tumah. Okay.
But it's going to still touch.
And it'll touch, and at this point in time,
not calling it chala, it can touch and not become.
Correct. Now, with all that stated, that's all the background that we need to know. Now we go back to our Gemara, and now we read the next Mishnah.
Yeah.
The Mishnah that I just went through.
It's not called chala. What's its status? Is it considered chulin?
Stay tuned. Stay tuned. That's coming up in just a moment. Finally, one question I can handle. So that was the second perek of Chala Mishnah Zion. Now we're learning together. We're going back to the Gemara. Now we're learning Mishnah Ches. Rabbi Elazar did not. We learned in the Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Chala Nitlas Min HaTahara El HaTameya. Ketzad. So Rabbi Elazar is of the opinion that the Chala Tahara will be separated on behalf of the Chala Tameya. And how is that done? Excuse me. Shtei Yisus Achas Tahara V'Achas Tameya. I have two doughs. One is tahor and the other one's tummy. No tol kidei chala mi'isa shalohorma chalta v'nosein pachos mi'chabetza be'emsa kidei lik tol min amukaf. So Rabbi Elazar says, here's what you're going to do. So you're going to have the two doughs almost touching one another, and I'll put in a buffer. And what that buffer is going to be is another dough, and that another dough is going to be smaller than a kibetza, because remember, when it comes to food, in order for food to become tummy, it needs a shear. The shear of tumma by food is a kibetza. So I'll have a dough in the middle, and that dough in the middle will be pachos mi kibetza. Kidei lito menamukav. So now what I will have done is I will have that contact that I want, because there's a mitzvah of minamukav, and on the other hand, the dough that's tahor is going to remain tahor.
So, you're doing this. Why do you have to change the status and not call it chala?
Just give me a second. V'chachamim osim, and the chachamim say, no, you cannot do that. V'tanya, and another brisa says kibetza, and another brisa says, this is a brisa, not the Mishnah, that according to Rabbi Eliezer, you can put a buffering dough in the middle, and the dough can even be the size of a beitza. So, and it's still, that dough which is a beitza is not going to be metame the chala. Okay, now, so if I can, just to picture this, just to give a visual of what's happening over here, I have one dough which is tameya, it's chala. So let's call it tameya. I have another dough next to it, which is tahora. Now, I can't separate chala from the tamei dough, because if I do, all I'm ending up with is chala tameya, and that is, from Rabbi Eliezer's standpoint, useless to the Kohen. What's he going to do with chala tameya? So, I'm going to take dough from the chala tahora onto the chala tameya. The problem is that there's a halacha of minamukav, where it means, meaning that I want them touching one another. Touching one another, so then that kind of defeated the whole purpose. The chala tahora now becomes tameya. I don't want that. So what I'm going to do, says Rabbi Eliezer, in the eighth Mishnah, of the second parak of Challah is I'm going to put a buffering dough in the middle. That buffering dough in the middle is going to help me satisfy the mitzvah of min hamukaf, but on the other hand, protect the challah that I'm separating from not becoming tameh. And on this buffering dough in the middle, so I have a mishnah and I have a brisa. The mishnah says that buffering dough in the middle has to be pachus mikabetza. The brisa says that buffering dough in the middle can be even the size of a kabetza. Now that we're all here, now we set ourselves up, and the Gemara says, and now let's explain.
Where's the buffering dough going to come from?
Separate batch. Okay, just give me a moment. Let's play this out. Mm-hmm. So, Vitanya Kabetza Savruha. So they thought, meaning that when the young men in the Beis Medrash are seeing this discrepancy between a Mishnah and the Braisa, so they want to now give a lumdus. They want to explain what's the analytical difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa. So Savruha. So they thought to say Idavi. So we're going to start setting ourselves up with assumptions. So let's assume that the dough that's tame is a rishon latuma. Again, it's an assumption. And now, here we get to the issue which Ben raised just a moment ago. And that is, I have the tahor dough. Now the tahor dough is chulin. But embedded within this dough is going to be challah. Because I'm going to take 4% of it away and designate it as challah. So I have what's called chulin hatvulin lechallah. Meaning it is chulin, but at least with challah potential lying therein. And the question which comes up again and again throughout Shas is as follows. When it's regular chulin, we know chulin becomes a sheni, doesn't go beyond a sheni. Again, that's going to be our whole point right now, but we know that. But if it's chulin with potential kodesh in it, it's got truma inside of it. In this case, it's got challah inside of it. And I'm going to be separating the challah from it. But while it's latent, the latent challah that's inside, does it give the chulin a higher status? Does it make it more susceptible to tumah? And this is a basic question that comes up again and again. So again, the assumption we're going to go in now is that even though it's got lein chal inside, the status of that tahor dough is just that it's regular chulin. My love b'hakamiflagi. And the Gemara says, and now that we set up our assumptions, now we can explain the machlokas. So the Gemara says, now let's say that the tummy dough is a risha. The buffering dough in the middle now is a sheni. Can that buffering dough in the middle now transmit the tumah to the tahor dough? That's exactly the machlokas. One position is that a sheni can make a shlishi, and the other position is that a sheni cannot make a shlishi. If you subscribe to the viewpoint that a sheni cannot make a shlishi, the buffering dough in the middle could be a kibetza. What's the big deal? The buffering dough in the middle is a kibetza. It becomes a sheni. That's great news. Doesn't matter. Sheni can't make a shlishi. What about the fact that the tahor dough has latent challah inside? For that, we're going to say right now, so what? It's latent. It does. It's right now, the tahor dough is just simply chulin. On the other hand, if you hold that sheni can make a shlishi, now we have a problem. The tummy dough is a rishon. The buffering dough in the middle is a sheni. And if you subscribe to a sheni making a shlishi, and that buffering dough in the middle is the size of a kibetza, now we have a problem. And that explains the Mishnah. The Mishnah is saying that the buffering dough in the middle is going to be less than a kibetza. Because food less than a kibetza does not transmit tumah. Okay.
Don't we have the principle that if something is about to be done for that status that is already done for it? So the third piece of challah is going to become challah.
Okay, I understand that, but the latent challah is going to change the status, yes or no? It's a consistent machlokas. Amar of Mary buried the Rav Kahana dekule amar ain sheni osa shesh bechulin. So the Gemara says, nope, let's not do that. Let's just assume that everyone is a subscriber to the viewpoint that in the world of chulin sheni does not make a shlishi. Which again, that's the halacha. That's, you know, we all these Tanaim subscribe to it. Rabbi Akiva disagrees with respect to Rabbi Akiva. And the Gemara says, and over here, the issue could just simply be a question of that dough, that tahor dough, challah tahora. So it has latent No, I'm sorry. Not the challah. The dough itself, the isa, which has latent challah inside. So is that going to make that isa more sensitive and more susceptible to tumah? The Gemara says that's going to be the issue. Marsav kechala dame, marsav lo kechala dame. So the Gemara says that's the machlokas. And if that's the machlokas, so then I understand that the buffering dough in the middle is either going to be the size of a kibetza because the third dough at the end of this train is not susceptible. It's just regular chulin. Or no, since it has latent challah inside, so therefore it has a higher sensitivity, and therefore the buffering dough in the middle has to be less than the size of a kibetza. The Gemara says, or if you will, let's assume that the latent challah inside is not going to change the sensitivity of that dough. That dough is chulin. And over here, let's also say that sheni cannot be cannot render a shlishi tame. And over here, we can explain this machlokas based on an entirely different issue, and that is the following. I'm putting a buffering dough in the middle. Again, the tummy dough is a rishon. If it were to touch the other dough would become tummy. Done. We don't want that. We're going to put a buffering dough in the middle. Whether that buffering dough in the middle has to be either the size of a kibetza or less than the size of a kibetza could be reflective of another issue, and that is whether or not we're in Eretz Yisrael. Can I make food tameh? Yes or no? Meaning, even though
intentionally
outside of the only consequence being the food's going to be tameh, but the challah that I took off is going to be unaffected. But can I make food tameh with intent? This is the Gemara says subject to a machlokas. The Gemara over here doesn't explain what the machlokas is predicated on. But the Gemara says, but if you subscribe to that viewpoint, so then the Gemara says, so once again, we have now issue another way of explaining the machlokas without having to come on to the topic of whether or not a sheni can make a shlishi. With all said and done, ad kan divrei tuma tahara, that's the end of the topic of the Gemara's discussion of tuma tahara. Just a quick recap, Rabbi Kiva, the Mishnah, says that in the world of chulin, a sheni can make a shlishi. The Gemara now has spent nearly our entire daf. It started on Lamed Amud Aleph. It started with the statement of Rav. Five Tanayim, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shua, Rabbi Lazar, and Rabbi Eliezer, are all subscribing to the viewpoint that the Sheni does not make a Shlishi, Tamei. It's only by Truma, it's only by Kodesh, but not by Chulin. That's the Halacha. And with this, we will conclude for today.